Welcome to the Action Factory podcast. My name is Michael Dawson. I developed the Solutions Toolkit as a framework for residential youth workers. My passion is to help residential youth work teams perform better because it's the greatest job in the world. If you'd like to take some time to visit the website at theactionfactory.com, you'd be most welcome. You'll find lots of free and useful resources, courses, and of course, this podcast. And you'll find lots of people, hopefully just like you. I hope to stimulate some thoughts and conversations among our listeners in and around this wonderful work that we do. As you know, the Solutions Toolkit is a unique blend of the greatest change techniques ever developed. And since my early days in what I call the people business, I've been an absolute geek about how we can do better in our work. And I started following a trail of expertise from one to another. I became a huge fan of giants like Anthony Robbins and Richard Bandler. And these people in turn had learned from lesser known people like Al Quran and Virginia Satir. And all of these, amongst all of these people that I studied and read book, was the rock star of change. The rock star of change is, of course, Milton H. Erickson. And I'm sure you've heard about Milton H. Erickson in some way or another if you've ever been involved in clinical hypnosis or any form of therapeutic input. Now, this is a weird story. I'm almost frightened of telling this story because there could be so much kickback. But I'm only telling this kind of story to explain how my mind feels about it. So I remember some years ago finding out about the David Bowie exhibition at the V&A Museum. In fact, I went to the exhibition with my brother, who was a huge Bowie fan. I'd seen David Bowie a couple of times live myself, bought a few albums, and thought it was great. And no doubt about that. But my first thought was an exhibition at the V&A Museum. And I felt kind of out of the loop. I'd never realised he was this huge influence in the world of music, this icon of his world and of our world. And my only assumption was that this, and here's where I'm nervous, my assumption was that this was a stroke of genius, because whether he was or not, the exhibition would make it so. Do you get me? So, you know, please don't write in and waste your ink or the ends of your fingers, however you write it. I'm most likely off the mark here, but I have got a point to this. After all, how else could there be an exhibition in people's mind? In fact, since then, it feels like his status has been duly self-fulfilled, certainly in my world. In fact, Ronaldo opened a personal museum dedicated to himself, and a few others have done the same. I've noticed this over the years. And my point is that having a museum is like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it cements the message and it sends the message viral. Okay, Bowie fans. You know, Bowie fans will tell you this is nonsense, and I suspect they are probably absolutely right. But my point is this, I kind of feel the same way about Milton H. Erickson. It's just a personal opinion, but my personal belief is that he has become his own story. And what I mean by this is that in illustrating his methods, he has built a reputation as the master of waking hypnosis, as if he may have woven the very methods themselves into his own story, if you see what I mean, as we get deeper into this episode. Because if you're like me and a little bit cynical about the stories told about him, then the stories behind them are still incredibly useful. And I hope that kind of explains what I'm talking about. In a similar way, it doesn't take anything away from Erickson, that his marketing and promo, and it doesn't take anything away from David Bowie and many, many others. Stay with me. I'm going to get there. This is not a historical account, you know, for study. So please don't crib this into your thesis. It's just my take on the guy. I'm going to put my helmet on. Did you get that? Pun intended. I'll put my helmet on. Wait for the backlash from fans of Milton and David to flood it. I think my point is kind of justified. So whatever your thoughts, The name Milton H. Erickson is one of the most renowned and influential figures in the field of psychotherapy. Had a remarkable and transformative early life, and it was marked by his own challenges and profound experiences and a deep curiosity about the human mind and what its capacity is. He comes from a different world to us. He was born in Orem, Nevada on December the 5th, 1901. Milton Highland Erickson's early years were shaped by physical ailments and learning difficulties. He displayed dyslexia, colorblindness, tone deafness. It made it challenging for him to navigate traditional learning methods. So these obstacles, they kind of ignited in him an interest in the nuances of perception and communication. At the age of five, the family relocated to a farm in Wisconsin where Erickson spent his childhood immersed in the natural world and observing the behavior of others. And this exposure fostered his natural empathy and ability to connect with people on a really deep level. Then, in 1919, at the age of 17, Erickson contracted poliomyelitis, which we all know as polio, a debilitating illness that left him partially paralyzed, and he was confined to bed for several weeks. He experienced a profound kind of shifting consciousness, entering a state that he later described as self-induced hypnosis, and it heightened his awareness of the power of the mind and its ability to influence others. One of the stories I've heard is of him sitting on the porch at home, watching his sisters run around and play in the fields. He was paralyzed, but he was sat in a rocking chair, and as he watched, he felt the chair slowly rocking back and forth. And he said then that he used the power of his own mind to teach himself to walk. He developed an adaptive strategy for daily life. You know, he included using a typewriter with his toes and practicing self-hypnosis to manage his own pain and fatigue. And despite all the challenges, Erickson's determination to become a healer remained. He pursued a degree in agriculture, then medicine, where he became fascinated by hypnosis and its potential therapeutic applications. Erickson's clinical approach was unconventional for the time, and it drew heavily from his personal experience and observation. He recognized that people's unique life experiences, beliefs, and coping mechanisms held the key to their healing potential. Erickson's innovative techniques such as storytelling, metaphor, symbolic language challenged traditional therapeutic norms and resonated with patients who felt alienated by traditional methods. He believed in empowering individuals to access their own inner resources for healing and personal growth. And if you work with me, then you'll find so much of this to be familiar themes. A lack of diagnosis, working within the client's own map of the world, the belief in the client's inner resources. Why wouldn't this be familiar? Because a lot of this was the birth of neuro-linguistic programming and other approaches to change, which of course means his contributions extended way beyond hypnosis, impacting the development of solution-focused brief therapy. Erickson challenged the traditional view of the conscious mind as a passive repository of repressed memories. Instead, he recognized the unconscious's role in problem-solving, adapting, creativity, and he believed that the unconscious could be accessed and utilized to facilitate positive change. And I'll add in there that that's on the basis that we can assume that the unconscious sometimes takes us into our problems. That's obvious. He moved away from this traditional therapist-centered direct approach, and he believed that patients possess their own inherent resources and a capacity for healing, and his role was to facilitate their self-discovery and empowerment. So he employed indirect suggestion and metaphor to bypass the conscious mind's defenses and engage the unconscious. He recognized that individuals often resisted direct advice or suggestions, and he would use storytelling, humor, paradoxical techniques to subtly influence the thoughts and behaviors of his clients. He understood that each individual's experiences, beliefs, and coping mechanisms uniquely shape their challenges and healing potential. And he tailored his therapeutic approach to the patient, adapting his technique to align with their unique perspective and learning style. He utilized their individual map of the world, something we talk about a lot in my full training course, the way we can use negative behaviors rather than try and eradicate them or resist them. We use them, you know, to nudge people in a direction they should be going. Erickson believed in all of this, in empowering patients to take ownership of their healing process. He encouraged them to identify their strengths, develop coping strategies, and take steps towards their goals. So Erickson's influence clearly extended far beyond his own lifetime. His unconventional methods inspired countless therapists, and I will include myself in that. His legacy lay in his ability to unlock the power of the unconscious mind and empower individuals. Here's the point. As usual, we have to ask this question. What does this mean to me as a youth worker or a residential youth worker? After all, I'm not a therapist, and I hope by now you realize that you are the problem paramedic. You're first on scene to most crises, and it might not be your job to solve long-term mental health issues, but it's certainly your job to pick the client up off the road, metaphorically speaking, and deliver them in good order to the professionals if that's required. And furthermore, we have a huge impact on many other life factors that influence the client's ability to cope. And I'll digress there to say, if you go to my website, click on Start Here and download the Big Four PDF that talks about the immense power and influence that you hold as a youth worker. So without becoming skilled hypnotists or therapists, what can we learn from all this? It was only while researching this podcast that I realized how closely these lessons related to the principles we've applied in the Solutions Toolkit training course. You know, as a lot of podcast listeners have done the course, you'll see the relationship in most of these principles. And I make no excuses. And I'm proud that my course follows so closely the ideas and work of Milton H. Erickson. Number one, emphasizing this flexibility and adaptability. Erickson's approach was highly flexible and adaptable, tailored to the unique needs and contexts of any individual. Now, youth workers can learn from this by being open to using different approaches and strategies, depending on the specific situation and the young person's needs. As we do in the Solutions Toolkit, we are loyal to no particular working model. However, I also stress that we adapt to the individual too, using their attitudes, interests, and strengths for their guidance. Huge one, number two, is tapping into the power of storytelling. Erickson recognized the power of storytelling to connect with people on an emotional level and convey complex ideas indirectly. I have a section in the course on storytelling and the power of this for youth workers. This isn't everyone sat around telling a story, you know, around a campfire. It can simply be, you know, I knew a guy once who aced all his exams and he went on to be a huge success. But many years later, he discovered that he'd never passed any of his exams. It was all a mistake. But by then it was too late. He already believed it and he'd already been a great success in his life. That's a story. It has a point. It's interesting and fascinating and possibly true. Number three is unveiling those unconscious resources. Erickson believed that the unconscious mind holds untapped potential for growth and change. And you'll know that in the Solutions Toolkit, we talk about the eight laws of client interaction. And one of those is that the client has the resources to make change. Our job is to help them see it. Use metaphor, symbolism, and exploration. Number four, he nurtured self-efficacy. Erickson empowered individuals to take charge of their own healing and development. Youth workers can foster self-efficacy in young people by encouraging them to identify their strengths, set goals, and take ownership of their personal progress. Number five establishing that positive relationship. Ericsson built strong rapport and trust with his clients, creating a safe and supportive environment for change. We now know through future research and the Big Four that I mentioned earlier that developing that rapport quickly is very, very important. But youth workers can emulate this by connecting with young people on a personal level, demonstrating genuine care and respecting them as individuals. And in the course, we discuss accepted communication methods to help clients relate quickly and better to us. Again, that's all out there in the free PDF series. Indirect suggestion, number 6. Ericsson often employed indirect suggestions and paradoxical techniques to bypass resistance and guide change without direct confrontation. Youth workers can use similar strategies to address challenges with young people in a more subtle and effective manner because we resist direct challenges to any behavior that we are conducting. Number 7, promoting creativity and problem solving. Ericsson encouraged individuals to find their own unique solutions to challenges. Youth workers can foster creativity and resourcefulness in the young people by challenging them to think outside the box and approach problems from different angles. You'll remember how many times we've talked about allowing the client to be the expert to drive their own bus, and we just kind of sit behind them and offer options. I'm not really promoting the Solutions Toolkit, but I'm really proud of how so much of it fits with the Ericksonian way of working. And you might notice that there's no hint of any diagnosis or labeling. Everything is done within the client's frame of reference. So there's a huge amount of, storytelling and metaphor. There's so much we can take into our work from the above, and I'll make a quick download available to you with this episode to help share those ideas and simplify them. I think they are really interesting for you to have a look at the quick download, put these ideas into your mind, and just watch when you get in work at how people are speaking, what they're saying, and what you're saying. It can be really, really enlightening to spend the day focusing on that. So thank you for being with me today. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast feed and stay in the loop. We have tens of thousands of listeners. And in the next episode, we're going to talk about something you're going to find fascinating. This fella, Milton H. Ericsson, he seemed like a smart guy and he'd be a great asset to any youth work program. And I wondered what it might be like to employ him at your children's residential unit right there on the front line. That's the subject of the next episode of the Action Factory podcast. Thank you for being there. My name has been Michael Dawson from the Action Factory. I developed the Solution Toolkit, a framework for working with young people in residential care. There is a free version on the website, as well as lots of free resources and ideas. So do feel free to click over there. Okay, see you in a couple of weeks. Bye for now.